So today, our topic is the family of God, which is from a hadith, and therefore voluntary service as enlightened self-fulfillment. These are Maulana Hazri Imam's words, therefore these two words are inside inverted commas, quotation marks. And then we are going to link this to the celebration of Nowruz today. So if you go to the first slide and look at this hadith carefully, we need to look at it very carefully. The source of this hadith is from the book of Daimul Islam part 2 by Sayyidina Qazi Nauman, the great jurist and writer of the Fatimid times, who served four imams. So this is, you can find in Daimul Islam, which is now in an English translation. And this hadith, which in English we would call a prophetic tradition, that means a prophetic hadith. So these are the prophet's words. But of course, the prophet's words, like in the Quran, like in the hadith, are not his own words. They are inspired by God. So the prophet says, people are God's household. All human beings are the household of God, the family of God. And the most beloved to God is the one who helps his household and makes them happy. And then a little example. And to walk with a Muslim brother in order to fulfill his need is dearer to God than the itikaf, which is consecutive ibadat of 2 months in the holy Kaaba. It's a very powerful hadith, and you have to really reflect on this carefully to understand that God loves his human beings who are his cream of creation. He calls them his family, his household, and he says that anybody who helps his family or his household and makes them happy, he or she will be the most beloved to God. And in the example, look at the example. It is a very, very powerful example. Just to walk with a Muslim brother, you are doing nothing else, just walking by him or her in order that they go and fulfill whatever their need is, I mean support, then that is dearer to God than if you were to do 2 months of ibadat in the holy Kaaba itself. Now, this puts a completely different picture on our understanding of Islam and what it requires from us. That to serve other human beings, and in this case, Muslims are mentioned because they are your religious, they are the part of the Ummah, they are our religious brothers and sisters. And then within that, the Ismaili community are our spiritual brothers and sisters. So if we serve them, make them happy, then that will make God very happy with us. And if God is happy with us, then of course there will be just baraka and baraka and baraka for us. So please, all of you, when you get this set of slides, know that this hadith is very, very important. And if you also want to know more about the meaning of this hadith, then I recommend that you go to one of our translations, which is called the Book of Healing. The Book of Healing. And in this Book of Healing, there is a chapter called Service to Mankind or Humankind. Service to Mankind. We translated this book quite a while ago. In our latest translations, we tend to use gender neutral language, and therefore when we re-edit this book, I shall make it Service to Humankind, so that women, ladies do not feel left out of it. Okay, all right, let's now go to the second slide and see how the Quran also corroborates this idea. And Maulana Hazri Imam used this ayat in his as his golden jubilee emblem. And there are numerous speeches in which he has used this same ayat. The most the ones which we might remember most are the Canadian Parliament speech in 2014 and the Howard University speech in 2015. Maulana Hazim Imam has used this ayat more than once in his public speeches. And he said, he quoted from the Surah 4, Surah Nisa, ayat number 1, O humankind, be careful of your duty to your Lord who created you from a single soul, nafsin wahida. So we are all created from a single soul. That means we cannot deny our spiritual relationship with other human beings, no matter what they are. They may be of a different ethnic group, a different race, a different gender, a different religious belief. They may not even have a religious belief, but as long as they are human beings, then they and we have all been created from the single soul. And then it says, from it created its mate, its partner, its spouse, and from them both has spread abroad a multitude of men and women. And then warning almost, and be careful of your duty towards Allah, in whom you claim your rights of one another, and towards the wombs that bore you. Lo, Allah ever watches over you. So in this next sentence, we have, be careful of your duty towards Allah. So in Islam, there are two types of duties. There are the hukukullah, the duty towards God, and then there are the hukukul ibad, the duty to God's servants. And all human beings are servants of God, whether they realize it or not. So in this one ayat, you can see how we are told the essence of our faith. This is the essence of our faith. And Maulana Hazrat Imam, when he finished the Canadian Parliament speech in 2014, he ended with this by saying that this ayat has always inspired him. And our wish that it inspires every member of our Jamaat and every member of the Muslim Ummah and every member of the human family. Okay? Let's go on to the next slide, which is the poem from Sa'di of Shiraz, Persian poet who was born in 1210. And look how he conveys the universal brother-sisterhood which is embedded in Islamic ethos. You cannot separate this from the faith of Islam. There has to be universal brother and sisterhood, because we've seen the ayat, we have seen the hadith. This is part and parcel of the teachings of Islam throughout the history from the time of the Prophet to now. And Sa'di was a brilliant poet. He wrote in Farsi, of course. And he says in this poem, which, by the way, some of you may be aware, is actually displayed in the entrance of the United Nations building. And I have not done any research on who would have put it there, but I would be willing to bet that it was Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah. He was the president of the League of Nations, the precursor of United Nations. And it is more than likely that maybe Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah pointed them in this direction. Anyway, it's there. And those of you who live in the United States or you visit New York, when you go to the United Nations, please make sure you look at this. And what have we got here? It's very nicely rhymed by somebody. His name is Aryanpur. And this is on the web. I picked it up from there because I like its rhyming. He says, human beings are members of a whole in creation of one essence and soul. See, it picks up that idea of soul, nafsin wahida. And then he carries on, Sa'di, look at his brilliance. If one member, just one member, is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. If you know that somebody in your Jamaat or in your family or in your neighborhood or in the world in which you live who is in pain because of poverty, because of homelessness, because of hunger, because of mental health, whatever the problem. If somebody is in pain, the other members of the family will remain uneasy. And then Saadi finishes by saying, if you have no sympathy for human pain, the name of human you cannot retain. See, we have to have empathy, sympathy. We have to feel something, even if, you know, we may be living very far away from those people who are, say, in trouble in Ethiopia or Eritrea or wherever else in the world, in Burma at this minute. But at least in our heart, we should have a prayer for them. And if there are charities which are helping the children in Yemen or wherever, we should feel that we can contribute, as we say in our Gujarati language, tame aku full na apishako, tame ek pankhdi apo. If you cannot give a complete flower, give a petal, meaning give a token, because that is so important for us. And you know, it's really amazing how Mola sends you messages when you are planning something in your mind to deliver. Yesterday, on a program on BBC, a producer of, we have on the BBC three big charity events per year. And the first one is called Comic Relief. And in this, for about 3-4 hours of the night, famous actors and writers and singers and entertainment people, they come give their time free and they raise money through this program. And the producer is called Richard Curtis. And yesterday he was interviewed and he said, the person asked him, why did you go into this type of work? And he said that when he was little, it was Christmas time, he was a very young boy, 7-8 years old, and the Biafra tragedy happened in Africa. He said that his mother said to all the children, we are not going to celebrate Christmas. All the money for the presents and the Christmas will go to Biafra to help them. And he said he remembers that forever, and that is what guided him to become the producer of such programs. You know, this is something which our Jamaat should be aware of, that the countries in which we live, there are so many civil society organizations, so many charitable organizations. You know, this is in the essence of a human being, to help others. And it is not unique to the Muslim Ummah or to the Ismaili community. This is a universal thing, that in every society you will find people who help others. That itself proves how important and how natural it is to do so. Okay, let's go on to the next one. We have this balance here, which my friend Nasiruddin Khizr Ali has found for me. And, you know, straight away, I'm sure many of you thinking, oh, Hazrat Imam is always talking about balance in your life. Perhaps we have something today which will increase our understanding of what he means, inshallah. So this is in connection with the two types of ibadat in Islam, two types of ibadat. There is a complete paper on this written by Alwais Dr. Fakir Muhammad Hunzail on our website. It is called The Concept of Education According to Sayyidina Kirmani, Hamiduddin Kirmani. And you will find more information about these two types of ibadat, okay? What are these ibadat? There is ibadat-e-ilmiya, the ibadat of knowledge, and the ibadat-e-amaliya, ibadat of action or deeds. And in Islam, these should be balanced. Because if you do things without knowledge, they don't give you the benefit that it should. And if you only acquire knowledge, as all of you are doing, I'm so impressed that so many of you come online for what is a second repetition of the series of Jamaat Khana. That shows that you all want to participate in this Ibadat Ilmiya. It is an Ibadat. Your 1.5 hours or whatever you spend on this line, these are going to be counted in your record of deeds as the Ibadat of knowledge. Because Hakikati knowledge, faith, a human being is nothing without faith, as the Imam has said often in his Farmans. And your faith cannot be blind faith. There is no such thing as blind faith in Islam. I have to tell you that very strongly. Ignorance is a sin in Islam. You know that. You know that the Prophet made so many hadiths about if you have to go to China in order to get knowledge, go to China. You know, in his time, 1400 years ago, when there were no easy ways of traveling. And he said, it is the duty of every Muslim and every Muslima, male and female, that they should learn from the cradle to the grave. So ilm, knowledge, is very, very important. I mean, in the secular world, if you don't have the theory, how can you put things into practice? If you haven't done your course on medicine or dentistry or accountancy or whatever, you can't practice. And the same is true in religion. You have to have knowledge. And therefore, it is elevated to the extent of saying ibadat of knowledge. And then, of course, you mustn't just stop at the theory. You have to put it into practice, into practical good deeds. And this is called the ibadat of amal, amaliya, ibadat of action or deeds. And this should be in a balance. When Imam talks about balance between your spiritual and material lives, this is part and parcel of it. What he's saying is that you spend a lot of time in your material life learning new skills and new information. Similarly, you should do that in your faith, for your religion, for your greater and deeper understanding. This is a must. You cannot have one without the other, and you are going to, inshallah, see that in a minute. Okay, we'll go to the next one. Yes, now, what does the Holy Quran say about this? Ilm and amal. It says that whoever desires honor. This is a very difficult ayat. Almost every translation gets it wrong. So I am telling you now that whatever Quran you have, you will compare it with this translation here, and you will find a complete difference. So God says in Surah 35, ayat 10, whoso desires honor should know that. This is the words of the translator. Whoso desires honor, all honor belongs to Allah. Unto him ascend the good word, zikr, ibadat, and the pious deed, amalus salih, exalts it. So you see, you have to have both of these things. If you just do zikr, ibadat of parole, regular attendance in Jamaat Khana, that is very good. But on its own, it will have a limited effect. If you have pious, righteous, good deeds, amalus salih, with it, then your ibadat will be raised up, elevated, exalted. This is in the Holy Quran. So now we have a hadith, we have a Quranic ayat, we have another Quranic ayat, and we also have Muslim poetry to tell us how important it is to serve others, to do voluntary work, work for the sake of making others happy, comfortable, to support them, etc. Let's go to the next one now. So, you know, Islam is the religion of nature. I think I've said that so many times in these lectures. So let's take some examples from nature and from society. So have you ever wondered why birds have two wings? And we may have sometimes come across a bird that has, for some reason, hurt one of its wings. You know, perhaps a child has stoned it or something, we don't know. But if it has only one wing, it cannot fly. It cannot fly. You know, this is what the ayat had told us, that zikr on its own, or amalusali on its own. This is only one wing. It cannot fly. It has to be both in order to be elevated. In the same way, look at your personal world. You know, our own personality is a book itself. Why do we have two legs? Why do we have two arms? And you know, one of the horrible parts of our modern history is the number of people who have been maimed by wars. You know, they have lost limbs. And alhamdulillah, we have scientists who have invented prosthetics, etc. Yeah, but you know very well that if you have only one leg, you cannot walk properly. You cannot walk fast. In the same way with the arms. So two of both these things, amal and ilm, amal and ilm, ilm and amal, ilm and amal. And then another example from our society, if you look around, nobody uses a rowing boat with just one paddle. If you do that, you'll go around in circles. But if you have two paddles, then you will push forward and you'll be able to reach the end of your journey. So these are examples from nature, all right? And now we come to another important point from our history, from the knowledge which our great peers have bequeathed us. Can we go to the next slide? I've had to fit in quite a lot. Oh, Mola. Okay. This has gone funny in downloading it, right? I'm sorry that this is the way it's come out now. Let's see. This is an explanation which Pir Nasir Khisrau has given 1,000 years ago, more than 1,000 now, right? And what do we have? He says, again from nature, he says that if you look at the mineral kingdom, which should be, which is covered by these words at the bottom here, this first level is mineral kingdom, right? And this we call it the embryonic soul. The mineral kingdom, meaning rocks, stones, minerals, they also have soul, but it is very embryonic. These are the words of Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah Salvatullahi Alayhi in his memoirs. But there is soul. So when the mineral kingdom, meaning rocks and soil, are absorbed by the vegetative kingdom, on the one hand, the minerals disappear. But what happens? That they are elevated to the level of the vegetative kingdom, bushes and plants and vegetables and trees, etc. And they have acquired the capacity to grow. So this is a higher soul, a soul which can grow, the vegetative soul. Then as you progress up, if the good vegetation, because you know there is also poisonous vegetation. In the same way, in the mineral kingdom, there is good soil, but there can also be saline or infertile soil. So we are always talking about the positive side here, that the good soil is absorbed by the vegetative kingdom, and now the capacity to grow, i.e. the vegetative soul, has been acquired by the mineral soul. The mineral soul has risen to a high level. Amongst the vegetation, there are poisonous plants as well. But the good plants are eaten by the animals, and you know, even birds know which berries to avoid because they are poisonous. So these vegetables which are good, the vegetation which is good, submits to the animal kingdom. And the animal kingdom now has a higher soul because there is not only the capacity of growth, but there is movement and there is feeling. This is quite upset now, so it doesn't matter. I'm explaining it verbally to you anyway. Now from the animal kingdom, again, the animal kingdom is divided into two, haram and halal. The halal animals are humble, they submit easily, and they help human beings to survive, okay? So in the animal kingdom, there is not only the capacity of growth, but there is a capacity of movement. They can move from one place to another, which a plant cannot do. And they also have some feeling. And of course, they have sound. Different animals have different sound. Amongst the animal kingdom, when the halal animals are eaten by the human beings, rational human beings, now there is a growth in them. There's just leave it. I think that we can manage. Yeah, there is growth in them. Okay, there's feeling in them, but there is intellect now, rationality, and the speech depends on that. So every time one part of nature submits to a higher part, they acquire more capacities. They acquire higher soul. Now, up to the rational human kingdom, this is something which we can see, we can note, we can observe physically. But from the human kingdom, we are not going to merge in the imam in a physical way. The imam of the time, who in Ismaili literature is described as kamilun fi zatihi wa mukammilun li ghayrihi, that the imam is perfect in himself and he perfects others. So if we submit to the imam of the time, if we obey him, if our farman bardari is perfect, then automatically our ibadat will progress and we will receive the imam's blessings, in the sense that he will perfect all our faculties and capacities. And for this, I put Maulana Rumi's little sentence here, that, you know, he describes this type of progression in nature, also in his Divan, in his Masnavi. And then when he finishes this description, he then says, when did I ever become less by dying? You know, people are afraid of death. But this death here is very positive. It raises you to a higher level. And you know, in Ginans, I cannot tell you which Ginan this is, but because I don't remember the beginnings of the Ginans, but I remember certain words which are very, very important. And I know that there is a Ginan which says, kuch nahi tha sho, to sarve kuch tha sho. If you consider yourself nothing, you will become everything, meaning humility. Such humility. Yesterday I mentioned the example of Sayyidina Hassan bin Sabba, you know, the head, the chief of the Fidais at the time of Alamo. People are still afraid when they hear his name in Iran. What did he say about himself? He said, I am a dog at the threshold of the Imam. Complete humility and submission for the Imam. Then you become everything. So this is connected to our voluntary service. How do we do our voluntary service? And what do we achieve through doing voluntary service? As it should be done, with humility, with submission, with all the Islamic ethics, we are submitting to the guidance of the Imam. And the Imam, because he is perfect and he is here to perfect others, he will help us to progress spiritually and intellectually. Okay, we can go to the next slide. In this slide, you know, this has really, really blown my mind, you know, because it was at the Houses of Parliament in Ottawa, Canada, February 2014. And, you know, we all know this speech because of the way Hazrat Imam introduced himself as the Imam of the Shia Imami Ismaili community. Yeah, we all homed in on that part of the speech, which is quite long, where the Imam publicly declared who he was. Not that in these last two jamas of Maulana Sultan Shah or Hazrat Imam that they have ever not proclaimed who they are. But to do it in the Houses of Parliament, it both. Of them, right? Both the Houses of Parliament. The Imam also talked about something, some other things about our community. And this sentence is so, so important. He said, the importance of contributing one's individual energies on a voluntary basis to improve the lives of others is not a matter of philanthropy. You know, he has also said about the AKDN network of institutions, this is not a philanthropic thing. This is, Mullah has explained again and again, this is what the imam of a community is supposed to do. It is not charity. It's not philanthropy. This is duty. This is what, this is how we serve others. And so he says, no, when we do this voluntary work within our community or outside our community, we are not doing charity or philanthropy, but rather it is self-fulfillment, enlightened self-fulfillment. It's self-fulfillment. It's doing us a power of good. We are benefiting from it, the ones who are doing this. So it's not that we are benefiting others. Yes, we are definitely benefiting others, inshallah. But more than anything, we are benefiting ourselves because we are going towards enlightenment, enlightened self-fulfillment. Please, all of you, take some moments, you know, because we all do voluntary work. We, all of us, there is not a single Ismaili who doesn't do voluntary work. You know, even the all senior citizens who can no longer do physical service, they also do the voluntary seva of reciting tasbihs and benefiting us spiritually. So every single Ismaili, I think, does voluntary work. But why do we do it? Yes, we do it because our imam encourages us. Yes, we do it because we know of the Quran and its emphasis on good deeds. Yes, we know that voluntary work is according to the hadith, the service of God's household, his family. We know all these things now. But knowing all these things, its results, its advantages, its benefits are for the doer as well as for the one for whom we are doing it. And this is why throughout history, you have heard in many farmans of Maulana Hazir Imam that there has been service of many different types. Murids used to serve in the household of the imam. They used to serve in the administration when we had, you know, the Fatimid Empire and the Almohad as well state. They do the type of administration which is required there. They volunteered for service in armies. When we were, when we had two ages of Dore Satar, the Dais were doing their work to spread the faith. This was a type of service which was outstanding in the most difficult circumstances. You heard in my second lecture about the history, the painful history that our Jamaat has gone through. In those circumstances, in those painful, difficult contexts and environments, they did this service, often at the cost of their lives. They gave up their lives for it. And we've heard these things in the farmans of the imam, in many mandalis and majalises. Perhaps we do not know our history in any great detail, but we've heard from the imam the variety of service. And you have gone through in the part one series through things like the shoe company and the water company and the Baitul Ilm or night school teachers and, you know, social welfare, you name it, teaching online English classes to brothers and sisters in parts of the world where English is not the main language, etc. There is, you know, the variety of voluntary work is limitless. And then in the Golden Jubilee, the Imam introduces the Nazrana of time and knowledge. Time and knowledge. Give your time, give your skills, your knowledge. If your knowledge is secular, give that. If your knowledge is religious, give that to the Jamaat. You know, in one Diamond Jubilee Farman in Canada, he said, there are many wise people in my Jamaat, many wise murids. Listen to them. You know, so there is so many things we can do, so much we can do. And Farman's like, once you have fulfilled the needs of yourself and your family, whatever is surplus, share it with others. You know, this type of guidance is for our progress, for our spiritual and intellectual progress, for us to attain that level of he or she who recognizes himself or herself, recognizes his or her Lord. And then we come to one more slide. This is the relationship to Nowruz, but actually something else has occurred in my mind in relation to the previous slide, that there is an amazing quotation of Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah. It is in a message he sent at the time of his Platinum Jubilee. And I got it from a Platinum Jubilee souvenir from somewhere. And I copied that and I have put it in a book which I have compiled about Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah called A Bridge Between Two Epochs. And this message is in there. This book is available now on the Mono Reality website as an ebook. So you can go to that and you can see that. I will try and recall the words as much as I can. There are two paragraphs in that message. And in the first paragraph, Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah says that if you look around, he was talking in 1953. So this is quite near the end of the Second World War, right? And he said that when you look around societies in the world, you will see that human beings have made a lot of progress. How? In gaining control over nature. They have been able to use nature to produce power, to do this, that, and the other. And in that way, they have really progressed materially. But then he says, but if you look around, by the number of conflicts and wars and bloodshed which is happening in the world, and those words are as apt and as proper today as they were in 1953. He says, if you look at all this conflict and disharmony and bloodshedding, you realize that people have not made any spiritual progress. And then in the second paragraph, he says, it is my hope that my spiritual children, the Ismailis, by their higher enlightenment and cooperative movements between themselves, will set to the world a better example of how to achieve true peace in the world. I've actually not done complete justice to this quotation. Please go to this book on the www.monoreality.org. The ebook is called A Bridge Between Two Epochs, and read that as well. I could have put it on my slide here, but it's already in that book, and it's already in the Maulana Sultan Muhammad Shah file on the website. Right, now we come to the final, which is, what is the relationship of this, all this we have discussed, with Nowruz? What is its relationship? So we need to know about Nowruz, that, you know, it's a Persian word. Nav means new, Ruz is day. You can call it the new day, or you can call it the beginning of a new year. And in the Northern Hemisphere, it coincides with the vernal equinox. So it's on the 21st of March. And today, the day and the night will become equal in length. Winter has gone with its darkness and all the deciduous trees which had shed their leaves. So there were all these bare trees. And the days become brighter and longer. And the leaves and the flowers bloom. And human beings feel happy. You look out of your window, even in the lockdown here, people are out because the sun is shining, there are flowers, there are leaves on the plants, and, you know, the fruit trees are blooming, so they're out. But that is the physical side. In Bhaktini terms, in esoteric terms, in spiritual terms, when Mormons fulfill the two types of Ibadat-e-Ilmiya and Ibadat-e-Amaliya, then they fulfill that, they keep that balance. They feel closer to the light of the Imam and they experience a spiritual spring. And this spiritual spring can happen at any time in their lives. It doesn't have to wait for the 21st of March in the Northern Hemisphere or the 21st of September in the Southern Hemisphere. It can happen at any time. And it is in relationship to that that Nasir Kisra says in his poetry, and this is in Shimmering Light, that when the light of the Imam shone upon my soul, though I was pitch dark as the night, I became the shining sun. Remember in the earlier slide, the Imam is perfect, but he perfects others. And this is what Nasir Kisra is saying here, that because he struggled on the path of knowledge and good deeds, that the Imam's light shone upon his soul and the darkness in his soul vanished, he became like the shining sun. You know, this is not only for Pir Nasir Kisra or Pir Sadruddin or for Salman Farsi. This is open to all of us. And really, this possibility is there for those who are the murids, the followers, the spiritual children of the Imam of the time. But then we have to follow his guidance to the best and more than the best of our ability. And we have to acquire spiritual knowledge and we have to make good deeds, amalusali, part and parcel of our daily lives. Then we can have this. Now, somebody might say to me, no, Nowruz is all about, happiness and dancing and all that, yes? And so I have the Dinan, Nowruz Nadin Sohamna, which unfortunately many people will not understand, but there is a verse in it which says, Eji ame sahib saate sahel akida, rid siddaj pamiya, ekman. Ek man ginan je sambre, jeev tena odariya. You know, so in this ginan of happiness, the Sayyid Fateh Ali, he doesn't leave out the importance of knowledge, except that the word here is not ilm. It is the Sanskrit word gnan, from which we say ginan. Gnan means spiritual enlightenment. So he is saying in this verse that we are following Ame Sahib Sathe Sahel Kida. We are following the Imam. And by following him, we have absorbed ethics. Rid and Sid means tolerance, patience, humility, generosity, integrity, all those words which the Imam simply says ethics of Islam. And then in the second part, he says, whoever listens to knowledge with total concentration, total concentration, their lives will improve. So this is all part of Nowruz, you know, and that is the beauty of our esoteric faith, our Bhaktini spiritual tariqa, that everything fits into a really consistent, logical picture, easy to understand and easy to put into action. And we are very lucky for that. And on this Nowruz, if you've really understood that today, then I think this is certainly a new beginning for us in the true sense. Thank you, everybody. I think I should stop there and invite questions now.